What do pilots tend to forget between primary training and their first flight reviews? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. Hope you had a good holiday. Paul Plack here, along with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. Bob, we appreciate your being here.
Well, Paul, it's always my pleasure.
Now, one of the things I know you do, because I did it with you last year, was a flight review. These are required by the FAA at least once every 2 years. And you made reference in Over the Airwaves to asking a question of one of your flight review clients regarding stall speed in a 60-degree bank, and he got the answer wrong. And it occurred to me to just ask you, what other kinds of things do you find when you go up with pilots who maybe are a little rusty or at least have not had a flight review for a couple of years? What are some of the other misconceptions or gaps in proficiency in terms of knowledge that you find?
Well, if I sat them down at my desk in the office and I put a model airplane on the table and map out a runway for that model airplane to land on, if you will, and then I indicate to the individual that the wind is coming, say, from the right, I'll ask them to take that little model airplane and have them use their hand, put it in their hand, and actually land the airplane on the desk and ask them how they would position the controls if the wind was coming from the right or from the left. And I'm absolutely amazed at the number of people who confuse what they do with what they should do in an automobile that might be skidding sideways on the ice. A point being is they don't know. Mm-hmm. And if sitting in the quietness of an office and in a hypothetical situation at slow speed where they're asked to actually think, which way would you bank the wings? Which way would you, you know, position the rudder in a crosswind landing? It's scary. And that's before we've gotten out into the airplane.
Well, Bob, I know that in ground handling in windy conditions, especially in crosswinds on a taxiway, it took me a while to get the whole idea of the fact that it's not intuitive for somebody who jumps out of a car and into an aircraft. Especially, you're a Cessna guy, when you equip an aircraft with a yoke or something that looks like a wheel instead of a stick, your tendencies are awfully hard to overcome if you're used to turning that control in the direction that you want to turn. That's often not the right thing to do in a crosswind.
It's totally counterintuitive. In an automobile, you turn into the skid. In an airplane, you turn away from the skid. I mean, that is, you just have to memorize that until you do it enough so that it begins to feel natural. If you turn into a skid, if you will, if you're coming down the runway and you're not perfectly aligned with the center line of the runway and you turn into it as you will in a car, you'll do nothing but lift that upwind wing into the wind. And you will totally exacerbate the problem in that. That's one area, Paul, in the flight reviews that I do. Another area that I like to do is to ask an individual at a safe altitude to put his feet flat on the floor, mm-hmm. and not on the pedals, and then advance the power to full power and pitch the airplane up into a power on stall with their feet on the floor, not on the pedals.
Okay.
And then, I believe me, I am standing by spring-loaded to recover from the impending spin. and they have no idea what happened. Obviously, I'm generalizing. Mm-hmm. You know, I've certainly worked, and I need to say this, with a number of pilots that I do flight reviews with, and they're good, sharp pilots. I no means do I say everybody that I do this with. But a significant proportion, I'd say one out of four, maybe one out of three, I'll put in that single maneuver, and if we have flight instructors listening, and I hope we do, just practice that exercise. Go out to a safe altitude, slow the airplane down, go into a traditional power on stall, feet on the floor, not on the pedals. And as that airplane pitches up and reaches stall speed with all of that left turning tendency and no right rudder, that airplane is not going to roll to the left, it's going to snap to the left and immediately the first turn of a spin. And we as flight instructors have to be, immediately proficient in recovering that airplane. And if we have individuals and flight instructors who are not versed in that technique, let me say, don't do it. Don't do it, and don't say, I told you to do it, because it is a thrilling exercise, and it demonstrates to the pilot, to the candidate, to the client, the importance of getting their feet on the rudder. Now, when you do gentle power off stalls, you don't have that sense because you don't have strong left-turning tendencies when the power is off on a power-off stall. But, you know, we get a lot of, you know, stall spins in the traffic pattern, and some of them happen on takeoff, particularly if we're in IMC conditions. And if that ball is not centered on takeoff as we climb into IMC conditions and we get into a high-pitch attitude and that airplane now is in a cross-controlled or accelerated configuration, bam. And once that turn starts and we're in IMC, you know, a few of us will be able to make that recovery because we're on the gauges, and that's a tough recovery to make.
Well, I learned to fly in little tail draggers from World War II, and putting your feet on the floor was never an option, so I don't think I'll be prone to that one.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, if a person is having trouble, get them out into a J3 Cub. You know, get them out into a Cessna 170 and see what that tail is, or an Aronca. See what that rudder is for. So that's a second thing that we see, the inability to handle crosswinds, the inability to handle a stall situation, properly handle a stall situation. The other thing I've seen is on flight reviews, I'll say to the student or the client, I'll say, make this airplane go as slow as you can. And so they power back, and of course we do our clearing turns, and we're in a safe altitude. Mm-hmm. And they eventually bring the power back to idle. And let's say we're in a Cessna 172, and the stall speed's right around 40, and they get the airplane slowed down to 55, and it won't go any slower.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, wait a minute. Look at the airspeed indicator. That green arc goes all the way down to 40. The white arc goes, or 45. The white arc goes down even lower. What does that mean, that white arc? What's the difference between the bottom of the white arc and the bottom of the green arc? And I get this blank stare. All right, so we explain that it'll stall at a slower stall speed in a landing configuration. Let's put all the flaps out. So mm-hmm. they get all the flaps out. Now they get the airplane down to, say, 46, mm-hmm. but they can't get it to go to the bottom. And and so they retard the throttle, and they retard the throttle even further, and now they get another problem. They're losing altitude. And I said, no, our objective is to stall the airplane at a specified altitude. Why are we losing altitude? Well, you told me to take the power back. I said, no, I didn't. I says, I want you to slow the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't I do that by reducing the power? So there's, in many cases, there's no understanding of this concept of the area of reverse command, where more power is required to make the airplane go slower.
Right.
This goes back to the first topic we're having in our 13-week pilot refresher course on basic aerodynamics. These are things that I'm finding that pilots who've been flying for 20, 30 years, who haven't really thought about these issues, are out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are three areas that I'm finding in flight reviews. You can have the same conversation with DPEs, designated pilot examiners, and ask them what are the most common reasons they fail candidates for the private pilot certificate or the instrument rating. They'll tell you probably many of the same stories.
When we come back from the break, we have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about handling engine fires in flight. This may be one of the more counterintuitive things we have to memorize in terms of procedures. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking safety issues. And Bob, in the May edition of Over the Airwaves, you made mention of asking someone what would be the correct procedure if you saw fire coming from the front of your aircraft. And we'll assume for this, the purposes of this conversation, that we're talking about a traditional aircraft with a gasoline engine located in front of the pilot and a tractor propeller configuration and all that. And this guy told you that he would immediately trim for maximum glide and start looking for a safe place to land. And that is the right answer for 90% of things that go wrong in the air, but not in this case.
That's right. You know, in the private pilot practical test standards, it asks the individual to demonstrate two emergencies. One is an engine fire, and the other is an engine failure. And they are two diametrically opposed responses. An engine, what the response that you cited, of course, was the response to an engine failure. But an engine fire, that's the last thing we want to do. We do not want to slow to best glide speed, and we don't necessarily want to look for a place to land. Job one, immediate job one, is to start the airplane going down. We need to reduce the time between the fire in the sky and the fire on the ground. So we've got to get the airplane on the ground, and we've heard it said that if once a fire reaches the wing spar, there's 3 minutes to live.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get an airplane to come down at 2,000 feet per minute, that means if we're above 6,000 feet, we're in bad shape if we get an airplane fire that reaches back to the wing. All right, so the first job that we need to do is start the airplane down just as soon as there's a hint of a fire or a problem like that. Call ATC if we're on an instrument flight plan. If we're not, just pull the power and start down. Immediately after that, instinctively after that, we have to remind ourselves what three elements are required to sustain or to support a fire.
Fuel, air, and a source of ignition.
Exactly. You're a great pilot, Paul. We can't do anything about the air.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do anything about the source of ignition. But we can certainly do something about the fuel. So reach down, get that fuel supply turned off. You know, idle cut off with a mixture, reach down or wherever it is. We ought to know that instinctively and in the dark. Where's the fuel cutoff switch? Get the fuel cut off. Get those things taken care of. Number three, and almost instinctively, you've got to get on the radio and issue a mayday call. You need to have help because chances are it's not going to be a smooth landing.
Mm-hmm.
If you do this properly to get the airplane down on the ground, there may be serious injuries, but at least you survived. And the problem is if we have an injury because of a very hard landing, unless we get help, immediate help, we may have survived the landing but may not have survived the ensuing wait for help to arrive. So we've got to get those three issues taken care of.
Well, and as you point out, if you're trying to minimize the time between the fire in the air and the fire on the ground, if you're incapacitated in an aircraft and you start the ground on fire, that's its own issue.
That's another thing. So I know I've been involved in a number of cases where, you know, we've alerted ATC to a problem, and I'll tell you, in every instance, they're on it. They are on it immediately, and the calls go out to the local fire rescue. They can pinpoint your location. In most cases, we're on a radar environment, so they know our latitude and longitude. They plug in those numbers, and people are there to meet the eventuality on the ground. Now, everything thereafter is debatable, in my opinion, because you're a test pilot. Do you go down at high speed and risk fanning the fire? Or do you go down at high speed in hopes of blowing the fire out? I don't know the answer to that question, and that's one of those debatable issues. Do you open the windows to ventilate the cockpit? Or do you keep the windows closed and perhaps create a different kind of a scenario? These are other issues that we have to talk about. Do we hold it in the air waiting for a preferable landing site? Hey, you know, any port in a storm at this point when we're on fire, we've got to get that airplane on the ground. Carrying a fire extinguisher inside the airplane, I'm not sure what help that does to us inside the airplane. It's always helpful when we have to jump out and put an engine fire out under the cowling. But sure, I guess having a fire extinguisher in the cockpit is something that's going to be helpful. But get the airplane on the ground. cut off the fuel supply, and make that Mayday call.
All right. Well, Bob, as always, something to think about. We appreciate your input. We'll refer listeners to the newsletter for more detail, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Michael.
You can read Bob Miller's Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.